you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah, 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 yeah.
Say you will.
Say it right now, baby.
Say you will.
Come on, come on.
Say you will.
Say it better, yeah.
You will.
Come on now. Say that you love me. Say that you need me. Say that you want me. You want
live from New York City, it's the Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
I still remember.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles, on location. But today is commentary day. As a result, we're going to hear about torture. Why? Because I was watching the other night to see how the different networks were looking at the allegations of torture and then destroying the videos of the torture of the new to be head of the CIA, this woman. And there's Sean Hannity, wrong on just about everything, but a super patriot in the sense that he's the biggest supporter of the president and the media, and he's not looking at the truth. He's merely looking at a reflection of his own narcissism. I'm going to deal with that today. If someone would, please send them the clip that I will do today on we've known for 400 years that torture does not work. He's merely reading the scripted notes of Cheney and the others who supported torture. We will be supporting the work of Michael Shermer of Scientific America. Also, I'll be adding my own commentary along with Professor Henry Giroux from the conversation on switching sides and whitewashing history. And if time permits, I believe that there's going to be a major massacre tomorrow in Gaza or in Israel where the Palestinians will be marking the day in peaceful protest. They will not be armed. And I'll bet a lot are going to be killed and injured. Chris Hedges is concerned about this. Truth Dig, killing Gaza. Also, I didn't have a chance last week to share with you David McCrary's piece from Counterpunch on the dawn of fake news. I think you'll find that interesting. Beyond health and nutrition today, I want to take on the subject of narcissism. So I'm going to look at narcissism from two perspectives. Many of the movements, not only today, but throughout my entire career, were controlled by narcissists, and where the movement itself had complete legitimacy and deserved to be supported, the narcissists did not, and frequently they limited the ability to make change because they themselves could not see their own limitations. Their ego wouldn't allow it. So why narcissists don't change, and also the psychology of narcissism with W. Keith Campbell. And also I'm going to begin a series on how insidious is the movement to lull you into thinking that you shouldn't do anything for yourself, that they have something they've invented in the way of artificial intelligence that can think for you. Just like, oh, you've got a mother, and the mother is lonely. Just say, Alexa, call home. And there's everyone looking back, and mom smiles. It's a commercial. I'm sure you've seen it. Or everything in your car. Where's the closest filling station? Where's the closest restaurant? Where's the closest mall? Now your thinking is done for you. And the largest encyclopedia in the world is Wikipedia. The trouble is, in some sections of it, on health and medicine, herbs, they're wrong. Completely wrong. They're engaged in demagoguery. What if you didn't know that? What if you didn't know who the people were and you trusted them? What then would you avail yourself of? That's the problem. We're going to address all this today. Let me mention some of you don't have our number. Please write this number down in case noon to one, Monday to Friday, you're tuning in and can't get on. You can always hear this show. First, the app on your cell phone, PRN.FM, gives you crystal clear sound anywhere you can have your cell phone in the world. you can listen to the show. Secondly, if you're not by a terrestrial station, that's one of the many stations that carry the show, you can call a number and listen in on their phone. Any phone you have, you'll hear their signal. Let me give it to you. Write down this number, 424-203-8046, 424-203-8046. But let's say you're working and you can't get to the show live, but you want to hear it. Go to the archives. You can download 5 shows at a time just by calling one number. Let me give you the number. Write it down. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And by the way, I was in the airport recently, and a person came over to me because there was a delay in my flight, so I was sitting there about 3 hours. And this person, who's very famous, said, "Oh, by the way, I just want to let you know that I listen to you all the time. I listen on the weekends. My wife and I drive up to Connecticut to our farm, and we dial that number, and we download your shows going up, and then we download more shows coming back." And that's the number they dial. So you never know when you want to archive show. So let's go to the latest on health and healing. But also, later this week, I'm going to do a special investigative report on this topic. It's about botanicals and phytochemicals. And according to the alma mater university in Italy, as well as the Medical University of Lodz in Poland, they looked at all the science for 17 years. From 1970 to 1917. That's a long time. That's 47 years. And what they found is there's an enormous amount of good research on ginkgo biloba, resveratrol, L-theanine, cacao, and curcumin, among other things, plus the Mediterranean diet. And they found specifically it helps with cognitive impairment. Wow. Cognitive impairment? You're talking about probably in the United States, at varying degrees, 100 million Americans. Almost one-third the American population suffers from some form of cognitive impairment because of beyond the age of about 35, the way we live with all the toxins in our diet, all the inflammatories, you bet we're suffering. And it only gets worse later on. All of the things I just mentioned are anti-inflammatory. Now here's what. The people who are the skeptics, the people who are the believers in scientism, or what's called science-based medicine, which used to be called evidence-based medicine. I fully support evidence-based medicine. I do not support science-based medicine because they're not looking at such things as intuition, not looking at universal consciousness, not looking at what many of us, many of you in this audience have experienced firsthand in healing. Think of all the people who've been at retreats and you've seen people who came one way and they left where it was no way in the world that that body could have changed in that week or two. No way. Not humanly possible, but it did. Not once, not twice, hundreds of times. So how's that possible? They're denying all that. So what we're going to do is this. They deny botanicals. They deny these herbs. So later this week, we are working as I speak on collecting all the world's scientific literature, both in English and other languages, on botanicals and phytochemicals. Everything from the Library of Medicine, Sloan Kettering, USDA, plus the other archives around the world. And we're going to put them in an article, and I'm going to share it to you this week. This is a continuation of our ongoing process of showing you who do you trust. What evidence do they have that you should trust them? And what if all along they've been betraying that trust by giving you their own perspective? Now, they have a right to that perspective, but they don't have a right to the facts, only their opinion. And all they're sharing is their opinion. So you'll hear that in about 2 days, possibly even tomorrow. In any case, the good news is that according to a 47-year review of these clinical trials, it works. It can help you with your brain. So just let people know, write it down, ginkgo biloba, G Ginkgo, G-I-N-K-G-O, biloba, B-I-L-O-B-A. Resveratrol, generally ginkgo's around 200, 300 milligrams a day. Resveratrol, R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, Resveratrol. Then theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E, 200 milligrams. Resveratrol, 100 to 300 milligrams. Cacao, generally up to 1,000 milligrams. And curcumin, 200 to 700 milligrams. That's just to give you some help in that. Also, Baylor College of Medicine has a new study that shows that blood pressure drugs, and a lot of people are using them, are exposing you to an increased risk of pancreatic cancer if you're a woman. Now, arguably, for some people, some blood pressure medications may be necessary and offer a benefit for those suffering from cardiovascular disease. But equally important is research out of Baylor College of Medicine that has determined some of these drugs, like calcium channel blockers or CCBs, can raise the risk of pancreatic cancer in menopausal women. By the way, these calcium channel blockers work by preventing calcium from entering the blood vessel walls and heart cells, reducing blood pressure and decreasing cardiac workload and stress. But the study examined a large group, 145,000 postmenopausal women, from the Women's Health Initiative study, and they showed that there was an increased risk if they used these blood pressure medications. So you do not want to get pancreatic cancer. So why not look at garlic, onion, vitamin C, coenzyme Q10? So many things will naturally, magnesium, lower your blood pressure, and vitamin E. For those of you who are diabetic, good news out of North Dakota State University, pears, all kinds of pears. In fact, you all have heard an apple a day. Well, now you could say that a pear a day helps keep or manage type 2 diabetes and diabetes-induced hypertension. The results of research published in Food Research International show the potential health benefits of Bartlett pears, and building on their previous studies, the research team from North Dakota State University in Fargo said that the University of Massachusetts studies whether the peel, the pulp, or the juice of pears could impact the prevention and management of type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and the bacteria Helicobacter pylori, which plays a role in intestinal ulcers and stomach cancer. And they said, yes, it does. So that's important. So you eat the whole pear, just skin and all. It is, does not raise your blood sugar high. It's really good. So, and it can help with your blood pressure as well. Also, blueberries can help treat post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, I work with some vets who have post-traumatic stress disorder. This study comes out of Louisiana State University, and it revealed that blueberries, now, wild blueberries or regular blueberries, either one works, can help with PTSD. And in the new study, researchers at Louisiana State University looked at the ability of blueberries to modulate neurotransmitter levels in this particular model of PTSD in the research lab. And they found that there was an enrichment in the diet, and they found that those that received the blueberries demonstrated a predictable increase in what is called NE and 5-HT when compared with the control group. So I would suggest a pint of blueberries each day if you want to help modulate your neurotransmitter if you have PTSD. Now, if I was working with someone and I had them, let's say, in some controlled environment where each day they could have a regular setup, then I would give each one not blueberries like you would pour in a pint, as most people would take them, but rather I would juice them down, and then I would put a concentrate in equal weight. So that would be equivalent to about 5 pounds of blueberries being consumed per day. That would be 1 16-ounce glass, and they would drink that throughout the day, along with other things, with special neurotransmitter stimulators. But then you're giving a what I call compensating dosage. And a compensating dosage is, and I'll go back to this because I've mentioned this many times, one of the ways that I've found I can help people is by overcompensation. And that means that to the degree you have any injury, illness, genetic trauma, something broken, a bacteria, virus, parasite, no matter what the cause, you have to exceed the level of the disease in order for the disease energy to be collapsed down by what is a healing energy. And that's why we have had so many remarkable results in the tens of thousands of people I've counseled. Simply stated, if you went to a doctor and says, "Doctor, I just was in a car wreck and I broke all my joints are torn and ripped, tendons, ligaments, my jaw is broken," and the doctor says, "That's unfortunate, here's an aspirin." Well, that may relieve some of the pain, does nothing to heal. The trouble is, when all you're doing is dealing with suppression of symptoms, you're not getting at the underlying epigenetic cause. And that's where healing occurs, not the symptom level. We need symptom relief, but we need far more. What is the cause? And for that, you have to exceed the current medical mindset. The entire mindset in medicine is wrong when it comes to using functional foods and natural non-toxic techniques. So that's where more blueberries, the better. More pomegranates, the better as well. In fact, mentioning, pomegranates, from Technion Institute in Israel, it's the Technion Israel Institute of Technology, a study by researchers suggested a daily half glass of super fruit juice from pomegranate could protect against heart attacks and strokes. The research was very important. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis, and its findings showed that the combination of statin and pomegranate concentrate helps delay the risk factors affecting the onset of atherosclerosis and its consequences, heart attack and stroke. However, my experience has been you could do it without the statins. I do not support statins at all. Here's what the professor Everam said, quote, "The pomegranate fruit addresses both the level of cholesterol and its oxidation rate because it contains both phytosterols, beta, specifically beta-sisosterol, and a most potent antioxidant, and therefore concentrates of pomegranate juice can delay the oxidation of cholesterol. In addition, it lowers cholesterol levels because of the phytoestriols in pomegranate, without causing unwanted side effects reported by patients taking high statin doses," end quote. So, and this was from the Food and Function, a journal of the Royal Society of Chemistry. Now, here's what I would do. If you're dealing with prevention, pomegranates are great. If you're dealing with already having a heart problem, then I would go to the concentrate. Sugar-free pomegranate concentrate, probably 4 ounces, dilute it with another 12 ounces, 14 ounces of water, and drink that. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 19 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I welcome you for all of our citizen activists, citizen journalists, and we have many in this audience. May I suggest that you now go to the three articles, part 1 and part 2 of the Wikipedia, the new Internet McCarthyism, and part three on homeopathy. And read them, look at the material, and start writing your own articles and putting them on the Internet. And let's also start putting the three broadcasts I did. How we can make a difference is we can share it. Keep sharing it and posting it as many places you can. By the way, a lot of places have already posted it, some major places. For those of you who know Tucker Carlson or can get this to him and Sean Hannity, I would appreciate if you would do so. Also, Laura Ingraham. I do not question their integrity. I believe that they believe in what they're saying. I don't believe because they're making good salaries or have an audience adulation or on a popular medium that they say what they say. I believe that whatever they're putting out each day, it's an extension of what they believe. Here is the problem. What happens when what you believe is wrong? Do you have the strength of character to say, I was wrong, I apologize, and now I'm going to put out correct material? On most issues, I'm on the opposite side of the argument on these, as well as on NBC and the people over there. I would be more on the same side of people like Chris Hedges, Cornel West, and people who are truly progressive. But on the subject of torture, the very people who said yes to going into Iraq and yes supporting the weapons of mass destruction argument are the same people who frequently felt that we did the wrong thing by pulling out of Vietnam and we did the right thing by going in there to stop the domino effect. These are the same people who felt that we should be in other countries with regime change, and yet they call themselves patriots. What kind of patriot doesn't challenge authority when authority has been shown to be wrong? And on the subject of torture, even as people were saying how it was justified, they got evidence of its benefits, it is not true. They're inaccurate. So why doesn't torture work? On this, I'm going to share the thoughts in Scientific America of Michael Shermer. But I'm sure many of you have done your own homework and have found that it doesn't work. As recounted by author and journalist David Menex during the European witch craze, the Duke of Brunswick in Germany invited two Jesuit scholars to oversee the Inquisition's use of torture to extract information from accused witches. Quote, the inquisitors are doing their duty. They are arresting only people who have been implicated by the confession of other witches. End quote. This is what the Jesuits reported. Remember, today we wouldn't have Jesuits. We would say that that is the CIA or Homeland Security or ICE or SWAT teams, or our implanted assets. The Duke was skeptical. Suspecting that people will say anything to stop the pain, he invited the Jesuits to join him at the local dungeon to witness a woman being stretched on a rack. Quote, now, woman, you are a confessed witch, he began. I suspect these two men of being warlocks, the two Jesuits. What do you say? Another turn of the rack, executioners? The Jesuits couldn't believe what they heard next. No, no, the woman groaned. You're quite right. I've often seen them at the Sabbat. They can turn themselves into goats, wolves, and other animals. Several witches have had children by them. One woman even had eight children whom these men fathered. The children had heads like toads and legs like spiders. End quote. Turning to the flabbergasted Jesuits, the Duke inquired, shall I put you to the torture until you confess? One of the Jesuits was Frederick Spee, who responded to this poignant experiment on the psychology of torture by publishing a book in 1631. It was entitled Caudio Criminalis, which played a role in bringing about the end of the witch mania and demonstrating why torture as a tool to obtain useful information doesn't work. This is why, in addition to its inhumane elements, it is banned in all Western nations, including the United States, whose Eighth Amendment to the Constitution prohibits, quote, cruel and unusual punishments. What about waterboarding? That's, quote, enhanced interrogation, not torture, right? When the late journalist Christopher Hitchens underwent waterboarding for one of his Vanity Fair columns, he was forewarned in a document he had to sign that he might, quote, receive serious and permanent physical, emotional, and psychological injuries and even death, including injuries and death due to the respiratory and neurological system of the body. Even though Hitchens was a hawk on terrorism, he nonetheless concluded, quote, if waterboarding does not constitute torture, there is no such thing as torture. Still, what if there is a, quote, ticking time bomb set to detonate in a major city and we have the terrorist who knows where it is? Wouldn't it be moral to torture him to extract information? This was an argument I've heard Sean Hannity give. I used to hear Bill O'Reilly give this as well. Surely the suffering or death of one to save millions is justified, no? Call this the Jack Bauer theory of torture. In the hit television series 24, Keith Sutherland's character is a badass counterterrorism agent whose, quote, ends justify the means philosophy makes him a modern-day, well, hero. In most such scenarios, Bauer, and we the audience know that he has in his clutches the terrorist who has accurate information about where and when the next attack is going to occur, and that by applying just the right amount of pain, he will extort the correct intelligence just in time to avert disaster. It's a Hollywood fantasy. In reality, the person in captivity may or may not be a terrorist, may or may not have accurate information about a terrorist attack, may or may not cough up useful intelligence, particularly if his or her motivation is to terminate the torture. In contrast, a study in the Journal of Applied Cognitive Psychology entitled The Who, What, and Why of Human Intelligence Gathering surveyed 152 interrogators and found, quote, the rapport and relationship-building techniques were employed most often and perceived as the most effective regardless of context and intended outcome, particularly in comparison with confrontational techniques, end quote. Another study in the same journal entitled Interviewing High-Value Detainees, sampled 64 practitioners and detainees and found, quote, that detainees were more likely to disclose meaningful information and earlier in the interview when rapport-building techniques were used. Finally, an exhaustive 2014 report by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence analyzed millions of internal CIA documents related to the torture of terrorism suspects, concluding that, quote, the CIA's use of its enhanced interrogation techniques was not, I repeat, was not an effective means of acquiring intelligence or gaining cooperation from detainees, end quote. It adds that, quote, multiple CIA detainees fabricated information resulting in faulty intelligence. Terrorists are real. Witches are not. But real or imagined, torture doesn't work. So then why will people double down and go even harder on the idea? Pull back for one moment. Guantanamo was a torture base. The vast majority of persons held there, some for more than a dozen years, without trial, were known to have been non-combatants. Why? How did they get there? Because the United States, in its foolishness, gave large bounties to people who would turn in suspected terrorists. And so people in Afghanistan were saying, this person's a terrorist, that's a terrorist, and they were getting large cash in hand, no questions asked. But the vast majority had no association with terrorism, only a small number did. So this is what happens when you try to take someone who has not committed a crime and get them to plead to a crime. It is always best to use non-lethal means, as this study shows, and yet these people will double down. Now I'm going to play two things, and here's why I'm going to play them, and then I'm going to open it up for your comments before we go to my next commentary. Right now, Sean Hannity and the team of Jarrett, the attorney, who I have a lot of respect for, I think he does a good job, and some of the other people, a man named Fenton, who I believe is doing a good job, some I do not believe are doing, they're ideologues purely and simply, the John Boltons, the others appear on his show, but on one particular issue, and that is that I believe that the deep state has showed its hand, in part, by its desire to destroy Trump because they're feared they cannot control him. Clinton they can control. And just use common sense, just common sense. What does it tell you when the entire military-industrial complex, that's over 200,000 contractors, the entire media, all the major media, the entire Wall Street group, all the banks, the entire agriculture from Monsanto and Bayer, all the major industries, the entire banking industry, when all these major industries, all of them together, support one candidate? If you are that adamant, not just in supporting that candidate, but financing that election, it's only because you've got a dog in the game here. They knew what they could depend upon Clinton to keep everything going as it had always been promised and just give euphemisms and promises if the public got disappointed. When she lost, they had to have a way of getting her back into power. And as a result, this so-called, you know, hacking of the DNC, which there's no proof of. To the contrary, Julian Assange has shown, and the former ambassador to Great Britain has shown, that it was an insider inside the DNC, a Bernie Sanders supporter who saw the corruption, which actually happened, and the reporters didn't go after that story, and that Bernie should have been the president. Now, Jill Stein is who I voted for, but I believe Bernie would have still been a whole lot better than Clinton or anybody better than Trump. But why hasn't that been a story? The only person who's made that a story is Sean Hannity. So on this one point, Hannity got it right. And yet, let's see the final outcome of where the, and that what's going to make the outcome significant is what the Justice Department Inspector General's report states. From there, the indictments and everything will also flow. But on this rush to war, the bombing of Assad in Syria, not looking for the scholarship that would prove, Sean, you've got enough producers working for you, you have access, unless you're calling the wrong people, you could have easily found what we found. If we found six different experts, all showing there was no bombing at any time, by a poison gas by Assad, and it was the United States' own a terrorist that we were supporting doing this, you could have done the same, as could have all the networks. I believe it is narcissism that is standing in the way of good reporting, honest reporting, and objective intent. Let's talk about first why narcissists never change.
This is Sand, and you're listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by thelittleshaman.org. That's me, the Little Shaman. Today I wanted to talk to you about why narcissists don't change. Of course, most of it's because they can't change. They don't have the insight or ability to see how their behavior looks to other people or evaluate themselves honestly. So how can they even realize something's wrong? But even if they could see and evaluate themselves realistically, there's another reason they don't change, and that's because what they do works for them. Now you might think, well, how does it work for them if they're so miserable and hate themselves so much? And that's a valid question, but to answer it, you have to think like a narcissist. If you can see nothing but your own feelings, and you feel so empty and awful all the time, then I guess probably what you'd care the most about are things that make those feelings go away. And just about the only things that do that are getting what they want and hurting other people. Getting what they want helps them feel less empty and more important, and abusing others makes them feel powerful and less of a victim. It also helps them blow off steam. Their self-hatred is poisonous. They can only deflect or deny it so long until it reaches a point where it has to come out. Hurt people, as they say, and it's really true. Narcissists take out their own self-hatred on other people because it's the only way they get any relief from it. when they can talk about how bad someone else is and punish that person, they don't have to keep thinking about what a terrible, unlovable monster they are. There are people who disagree with this, and all I can say to them is watch the narcissist you come across. Listen to what they say. The self-hatred is evident in every single thing they do. You can't miss it once you know what to look for. There's also often a lot of talk about narcissists wanting positive attention, and that's true. The problem is that any positive attention they receive is self-limiting. It's only going to last so long. Because even if narcissists do receive positive attention, they don't believe in it. So while that's something they really like, it's never enough for them. That's why the nasty, abusive side always comes out eventually. Narcissists like positive attention, such as people thinking that they're smart or good-looking or whatever, but they don't trust it. It makes them uncomfortable inside, not only just because they think everybody is a manipulator and a liar just like they are, but because they know the image people are admiring is fake, and they feel that others are going to see that. They are in a constant state of paranoia and fear that they're going to be seen through. This is why they might be saints in public, but a terror at home. The fear and paranoia, as well as their ever-present negative feelings of self-hatred, have to come out. Somebody has to be the enemy that they can hate and fight and blame. Somebody has to be the villain. It can't be them. Their disorder was created as a defense mechanism designed to keep them from ever hearing anything bad about themselves, and their denial is absolute. It's rock solid. So they take it out on people they have already decided don't care about them, usually because these people have seen what the narcissist is trying to hide. This ends up being everybody eventually, because their self-hatred and self-abuse causes them to abuse others to try and get relief from that. This is why you can do everything a narcissist wants the second they ask you to, and you'll still be wrong somehow. They want you to be wrong so they can attack you. They're looking for an excuse. They're looking for an outlet for that self-hatred. So why would they change when their system works for them? They get what they want, and they get to feel better. Those are the only two things they care about, and the way they do things accomplishes both of those things perfectly. They are miserable, sure, but they don't believe or care or notice that their behavior is causing them more problems because they don't believe there's a way out of that misery in the first place. All they care about is avoiding it as much as they can. If you pay attention, you'll notice that is what all their behavior is geared towards, making themselves feel better. They don't even notice how their behavior makes other people feel, and they wouldn't care if they did, because it's not important. What's important is that they need to feel better. If you get in the way of that, there will be a very large problem. This is why they accuse people of being hateful to them over the weirdest things, like saying that you don't love them if they can't buy something or you won't give them something, for example. It isn't that they equate money or gifts with love, although of course some of them do. It's that getting that one thing is the only thing that can make them feel better and worthy and valuable. Their entire self-worth is wrapped up in getting this one thing today. And you obviously want them to feel worthless and bad and horrible, which is why you won't give it to them. It sounds so stupid and childish to a non-narcissistic person, but they mean it. And of course, many times, their behavior gets them what they want, either because someone gives in out of guilt or gives in simply to shut this person up. People don't continue to do things that don't work for them, and this is true of narcissists as well. You might say it's not working for them, considering the outcomes of...
Okay, this goes on for about 3 more minutes, but I think you got the message there. Now think of actors. You know, think of people in creative positions. Think of people like the head, the man who, I saw a movie, I thought he really, really treated the chief ballerina with such disrespect, Peter Martins. In the documentary, is a very short in and out documentary about the life of the greatest ballerina for the New York City Ballet and what happened in her life. I see narcissism so many different places where there's no willingness for the we to exist. It's the me and you're here to support me. That's a narcissist. I see so many movements. The feminist movement is probably one of the best examples of a movement that deserved to exist, needed to exist, had almost all the wrong leaders, massive narcissism and hatred. Then you wonder, why wasn't it more successful? If you have something that's that obvious and can be shared in such a way that you don't have to offend someone that you're sharing it with, you don't have to put someone down, then why wasn't that kind of more enlightened mind used? Because the spiritual feminists were kept out. It was managed by massive narcissists. And the same is even true of the anti-war movement. I remember back in the Vietnam War protest, and I was using my space over at 81st and Broadway on the second floor. I had that whole space, which is now the Staples Center. And we had a very secret anti-war movement there where we would write scripts and hand it out to people. We were invisible. But a lot of the people who needed to be out there, they needed to accumulate kudos from the public, where the real troopers behind the scenes. Narcissists always need to be in front of everything. I remember once going to, I won't mention the person because he's a well-known liberal filmmaker, documentarian, but we were both going to a premiere together, and I chose not to walk down the red carpet. I don't believe in red carpets. I don't believe in that elitism. I refuse to attend anything like that. Well, this person went right into it, but he is a complete narcissist. What does he really think of people, including his own audience? He's very dismissive of them. I know that for a fact, because I've known this person for a long time on a very personal level. But then again, I've had two friends in Hollywood. One was one of the, Neil Koningsberg, one of the most important managers, public relations expert in the history of Hollywood. And Neil used to work for me. I hired him from Esquire magazine, and for 3 years he worked for me. And then I gave him a loan to go to Hollywood. And he just retired not long ago. And the horror stories that he told me about all the people that he managed, plus the whole culture of Hollywood. Yeah, everyone knows everyone's secret out there. There are no secrets in Hollywood. So when people are suddenly surprised and, oh my God, you mean Harvey Weinstein? Everyone knew what Harvey Weinstein was doing. Another friend of mine was one of the financial A people, meaning he backed all the movies. So everybody went to his house. And he was a very close personal friend, one of my lifetime best buddies. So I learned a lot from about selfishness, narcissism, and what it denies in itself because it doesn't want to show vulnerability. But what did it projects upon other people. And now you have all this this virtue posturing where everyone claims to be against something, but then look at them. The people are against guns. They had 400 armed people at the Academy Awards. They're against walls. Tear down those walls. Hold on a second. You've got walls around your property with an armed guard on the inside. How can you come and virtue posture and lecture us when you're a hypocrite? And I see all of Hollywood, with a few exceptions, being hypocritical. I see the news media is hypocritical. I see everything is hypocritical. I see narcissism everywhere. I just hope you begin to see it for what it is, so then you start to realize how often we're played. Here's part two of narcissism. Go a little further into understanding it. This is The Psychology of Narcissism by W. Keith Campbell.
Way before the first selfie, the ancient Greeks and Romans had a myth about someone a little too obsessed with his own image. In one telling, Narcissus was a handsome guy wandering the world in search of someone to love. After rejecting a nymph named Echo, he caught a glimpse of his own reflection in a river and fell in love with it. Unable to tear himself away, Narcissus drowned. A flower marked the spot where he died, and we call that flower the Narcissus. The myth captures the basic idea of narcissism, elevated and sometimes detrimental self-involvement. But it's not just a personality type that shows up in advice columns. It's actually a set of traits classified and studied by psychologists. The psychological definition of narcissism is an inflated, grandiose self-image. To varying degrees, narcissists think they're better looking, smarter, and more important than other people, and that they deserve special treatment. Psychologists recognize two forms of narcissism as a personality trait: grandiose and vulnerable narcissism. There's also narcissistic personality disorder, a more extreme form, which we'll return to shortly. Grandiose narcissism is the most familiar kind, characterized by extroversion, dominance, and attention-seeking. Grandiose narcissists pursue attention and power, sometimes as politicians, celebrities, or cultural leaders. Of course, not everyone who pursues these positions of power is narcissistic. Many do it for very positive reasons, like reaching their full potential or helping make people's lives better. But narcissistic individuals seek power for the status and attention that goes with it. Meanwhile, vulnerable narcissists can be quiet and reserved. They have a strong sense of entitlement, but are easily threatened or slighted. In either case, the dark side of narcissism shows up over the long term. Narcissists tend to act selfishly, so narcissistic leaders may make risky or unethical decisions, and narcissistic partners may be dishonest or unfaithful. When their rosy view of themselves is challenged, they can become resentful and aggressive. It's like a disease where the sufferers feel pretty good, but the people around them suffer. Taken to the extreme, this behavior is classified as a psychological disorder called narcissistic personality disorder. It affects 1 to 2% of the population, more commonly men. It is also a diagnosis reserved for adults. Young people, especially children, can be very self-centered, but this might just be a normal part of development. The fifth edition of the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual describes several traits associated with narcissistic personality disorder. They include a grandiose view of oneself, problems with empathy, a sense of entitlement, and a need for admiration or attention. What makes these traits a true personality disorder is that they take over people's lives and cause significant problems. Imagine that instead of caring for your spouse or children, you use them as a source of attention or admiration. Or imagine that instead of seeking constructive feedback about your performance, you instead told everyone who tried to help you that they were wrong. So what causes narcissism? Twin studies show a strong genetic component, although we don't know which genes are involved. But environment matters too. Parents who put their child on a pedestal can foster grandiose narcissism, and cold, controlling parents can contribute to vulnerable narcissism. Narcissism also seems to be higher in cultures that value individuality and self-promotion. In the United States, for example, narcissism as a personality trait has been rising since the 1970s, when the communal focus of the 60s gave way to the self-esteem movement and a rise in materialism. More recently, social media has multiplied the possibilities for self-promotion. Though it's worth noting that there's no clear evidence that social media causes narcissism. Rather, it provides narcissists a means to seek social status and attention. So can narcissists improve on those negative traits? Yes. Anything that promotes honest reflection on their own behavior and caring for others, like psychotherapy or practicing compassion towards others, can be helpful. The difficulty is, it can be challenging for people with narcissistic personality disorder to keep working at self-betterment. For a narcissist, self-reflection is hard from an unflattering angle.
Okay. Again, we learn more. There's one more point that should be understood. When you have a Rush Limbaugh, a massive narcissist, or all the people on MSNBC, a massive narcissist, it's not so easy to change if in changing you no longer are the spokesperson for all the other people who are not narcissists but have bought into your ideology. So how do you change and turn around to those people and acknowledge you've made an error in judgment? And you have to go through a correction now. So that's why, can a narcissist change? Yes, anybody can change. Will they? Almost never. Not unless they completely fail. When they go through a completely failed state, like Schneiderman, the former Attorney General of New York State, he is now out doing some Buddhist meditation from what I read. And good for him, if he is. But he is at a moment where he's got to change if he wants to have a future. People can be very forgiving when we see that there has been a true and honest, in effect, reformation of their previous ideologies. They've changed. Now think of how much misinformation we are led into conflicts, led into anarchy, led into denying our responsibility for the environment, for less than 1% of the American public just about voted for true statespersons, people that would have helped us, Ralph Nader and Rocky Anderson, Jill Stein. That means that the vast majority of people did not believe that the individual was as important as the person, the narcissist, that attached their own values and ideas to. Your thoughts, talk back, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about what you want to share, think of Madeleine Albright. She's actually appearing once again in the media, and she's virtue signaling. It's kind of ironic because Madeleine Albright, without irony, has written a book on resisting fascism. Is that a hoot? She's also published an op-ed in the New York Times pushing the same argument. Albright was the former Secretary of State under Bill and Hillary Clinton, and she's alarmed. She wants to warn the public to stop the fascism emerging under the Trump regime before it's too late. Unfortunately, moralism on the part of the infamous and notorious, including the New York Times and Judith Miller, who banged the drums to get us into the war in Iraq, is often the enemy of both historical memory and the truth, in spite of their newly discovered opposition to tyranny. It defies belief that a woman who defended the killing of 500,000 children, I've mentioned it many times on this program when she was asked by Leslie Stahl, is it acceptable that 500,000 innocent children had to die in Iraq because of the Clintons' imposed sanctions? She said yes. Dennis Halliday, the UN United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in Iraq for part of the sanction era, once said of those measures, quote, we are in the process of destroying an entire society. It is simply terrifying. Is any policy worth the death of 500,000 children? If you're a corporate Democrat, the answer is of course it is. Has anyone, just think for a moment, don't react, use reason. Show me the single interview on any television program or radio show or in the media where Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton were held to account. Forget their sexual scandals. Just on this, you were personally responsible for the death of minimally 500,000 children. Did anyone ever challenge in that way? Not a single person. So much for the legitimacy. Albright, however, is not alone. Hillary Clinton, herself a former warmonger, an unabashed ally of the financial elite, has also resurrected herself as a crusader in fighting the creepy fascism that now marks the Trump regime. And yet her Obama years were pure fascism. And if you doubt me, ask the people in the Ukraine. Ask the people in Libya, in Syria, in Honduras. Those were all Hillary Clinton's fascist moments. In fact, speaking recently at the Penn World Voices Festival, Clinton appeared to have completely removed herself from her notorious past as a supporter of the Iraq War and the military-industrial financial complex in order to sound the alarm, quote, the freedom of speech and expression is under attack here in our own country. Yeah, Hillary, you're right, but progressives, their free speech is being attacked, not corporate Democrats. Haven't seen that anywhere. So I think that we must take a moment and pull back and ask ourselves, who do we trust? Do we trust the media, the mainstream media? I hope not. Do we trust the alternative media, depending upon which one? I'm not going to trust a television radio program that took the most important asset of Pacifica for its own personal profitizing and use that belonged to the people. No. No, do that and you no longer have my respect on any level, even though there are a whole lot of people who will wipe over everything. Well, wiping over this mess is like using a piece of dirty-ass toilet paper 25 times and not noticing the stench, buddy. No. If that's the case, then everybody in every organization should take whatever you can and try to justify it that someday in the future you're going to do good things. And therefore, you should only be judged by what you're doing today that's good, not what you've done in the past. And that's our society. Highly competitive, mercenary, monopolistic, selfish, self-absorbed. And the other day I played you a sample of a young woman with her mother. And I said, you shouldn't be concerned about this one woman. You should be concerned that there are probably 50 to 60 million like her out there. They have that sense of entitlement. They're removed from the real world. And later this week, I'm going to play you the richest kids in other countries, the richest kids in Russia, the richest kid in China, the richest kid in Iran. And this film takes you to show you what it's like to be rich in a young person, in a teenager in your 20s in Iran. You think everyone in Iran is poor? You're wrong. In fact, they can flaunt any of the rules that everyone else must abide by. So are those kids going to be the ones that are going to be the future and try to remain in a peaceful state, not on your life? Because once you've been given that mindset that you're entitled to your pleasures and you don't have to work for anything and you don't have to be responsible for the consequences of any wrong choice, then you're only going to have wrong choices. But immediately you're not going to pay for it. Someone else is always there to pay for that mistake you've made. And as long as you're not paying for your mistakes, there's no mistake that you will learn from. And right now we're a nation beset by massive amounts of errors and judgment with no consequence to the person. Consequence to nature? Yes. To a planet? Yes. To massive problems? Yes. But not to the individual. And as long as individuals don't have to be responsible for any bad choice, they will continue to only make bad choices. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.